Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Deep Dive for June 23rd, 2018. We are the PW Torch Livecast Saturday Edition. We are live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and wherever you reside. And, of course, we are chatting with you, so make sure you tune in. Give us a call, area code 515-605-9345. That is 515-605-9345. I've got Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire on in the fire on in the background, because it's one of those rainy days here in Pittsburgh where you need something on in the background. And I'm bringing some fire with you because I'm going to have my main man from the MTR network, Daniel Palmer, a.k.a. D-Palm, a.k.a. Two-thirds of the three-man melanin power trip, a.k.a. the man who would be king if it was not for the pancake batter man, who we shall name and slander in his entirety as we go through. But before that, I want to say just Rip Vader. He was one of my favorite big men, and I only saw him at first through the beauty of VHS tape and then later through WWF and then WCW tapes as I got older. But I'm going to bring my man on because he is of the Southern persuasion and might have some better memories. Palm, welcome to the deep dive. And do you have any Vader memories?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And I've got to say, I do have Vader memories. So anyone who knows me from either my appearances here or all my work over at MTR, I'm a big narrative guy. I like a story. I like to watch characters develop over time. And it's kind of infected my grown-up life in that my conscience is voiced by either Kevin Conroy from Batman or Peter Cullen from Transformers. But when I always think of fear, I've always thought of Big Van Vader. And so for me, I got to the WWF, WWE later than everyone else. I came in tail end of the Attitude Era because I was a diehard, grew up 705 Eastern superstition kind of guy. We're talking NWA, WCW, and we've talked on the show before. My biggest fandom in professional wrestling, the one I would say I would most happily ascribe myself to, is that of a vowed Sting mark. And you don't become a Sting mark without Vader. And there's a great article on Deadspin right now. The man who wrote it escapes me, but he made an excellent point that Vader was a lousy monster, in that you could be one of two monsters. You can be the monster that is the unmovable object that people just bounce off of. Or it can be the monster that you bounce off of and occasionally you knock down. And how much more impressive does your baby face look after the first time he makes Vader stumble? Sting was made, everyone points to the Clash of Champions match where Sting went the Broadway with Flair, and that's what made Sting a star. That's correct. That did make Sting a star. What made Sting a great wrestler was the feud with Vader, was just watching him come from underneath and eventually overcome. And it's one of those things, I didn't know how sad I'd be to lose Leon White and lost him.
And for me, I really regret getting WWE's version because obviously he was a little broken down and they didn't really understand him in the way I think a lot of guys would have.
I think it's not necessarily understanding. I think that the product at the time for the WWE, and the product, excuse me, for all time since took over, it's been larger than like cartoony thing, extra. With Vader, you don't need extra. He's just terrifying.
Yeah. I didn't realize it until I brought in a gentleman like yourself, who obviously on the MTR network does wonderful work with Character Corner, amongst other things, including your own show, which we'll get to in a moment. Just talking and listening to you now and then hearing about that Deadspin article, which I will find and try to tweet out because I haven't read it myself. Vader was Bane before I knew there was a Bane that needed to exist.
That's it.
Because he did everything. If you wanted the big man stuff, he could beat you up. If he wanted to show off, he'll fly like a little guy. And throughout all of it, he's breaking you down mentally to break you down physically.
I will say this. For much of our professional wrestling lives, there's been cruiserweights and heavyweights and super heavyweights. And what cruiserweights would do, some heavyweights would do, but no super heavyweights would do. The first time I saw a moonsault by someone who wasn't wearing a mask or who ran in that ilk in North American wrestling was Vader.
Yeah. I think I remember Bam Bam against LT where he did like that cartwheel kind of moonsault, but seeing a grown 450-pound man flip off of the top rope was something I think that probably changed the course of my life.
Man, it is a sight to behold. And for those of you who may not be as indoctrinated in Southern wrestling as I was, or you got to remember that at the time, Vader held three title belts on three different continents. The guy was an absolute monster, and I would invite anyone who's just a fan of or just knowledgeable about WWF run to take a chance and go down those archives because it has been there.
Yeah, I mean just to get an idea of how much WCW respected Vader versus how WWE kind of didn't know what to do with him as much as they could because, like as you said, you didn't need extra with Vader. When you think about WCW and then you fast forward it to WWE, think about for the most people who listen, they're pretty wise to like indie scene. Imagine if Keith Lee came onto the scene on the main roster, and I don't want to overstate this, but let's say it's I won't even say Triple H because that'd be the easy way. I'll say Bret Hart decides he's going to come out of retirement and be his manager. That is the level to which Vader getting on the scene and having Harley Race as his manager. Like the dude who was the king of wrestling in the old school is like, this is my new progeny. That's how much respect the man got. And that's before you add in the bells and whistles of the Mastodon helmet that was both terrifying and amazing at the same time.
Well, you've got to remember his very first match in New Japan Pro Wrestling, he beat Inoki. He started a riot at Tokyo Dome. New Japan banned from there. Like, this man was a heat magnet everywhere he went because of the way he carried himself and the way he worked. And we all know the story of him losing an eye in a match.
Yeah, he kept going.
He lost the eye. He popped it back and finished the match. That's insane. But it's one of those things where you say, oh, we'll never see another X, Y, or Z. You'll never see another Rock Prisoner Wise. You'll never see another Stone Cold Steve Austin from a reinvention standpoint and from a just an absolute master of the microphone and with more charisma out of his ears. But physically, like Vader's a LeBron James. You will never see a collection of physical skills the way Vader brought him. And the scary thing was Vader occasionally actually hurt people.
Yeah.
Like, and it wasn't like I always joke that AJ Styles is just tiny Vader because that's the old joke, if you can't take a farm, you don't belong in the business.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way Vader lived in the 20x20. And Mick Foley read something very beautiful about it. I'm gonna read on my show this week to close my show. But yeah, it's for me it's like those, hey, did you hear the boogeyman died? I'm like, the boogeyman can't die. He's the boogeyman. He's also the first wrestler who taught me what cage was because I am 32 years old, and as such, I am in the age wheelhouse to watch Boy Meets World in the original run. So there's an episode in the first two seasons where he plays Corey Matthews' bully's father. I'm like, wait, Vader's being nice. What? I don't know how to process this at all. Vader's not nice. Vader broke Sting. So that was one of my first lessons in kayfabe.
And for me, I think looking at Vader on Boy Meets World, that was something that kind of tied it in. And then, heck, seeing him on Baywatch, it was amazing.
That's amazing.
He was on Baywatch, and then I will fully admit this, as much as I dislike Terry now in the year of our Lord 2018, I was all about Thunder in Paradise. Just because it was like...
You're the one.
It was Nightboat. It was the Nightboat joke that everyone made about Knight Rider that they actually said, hey, what if we do this with Hulk Hogan and a toupee and Jack Lemmon's less talented son.
What could possibly go wrong?
Everything went wrong. And it didn't have a darn super pursuit mode, which bugs me to this day.
I can tell. You didn't have any way to mention it.
I did. I mean, oh, God. Super pursuit mode is the greatest night ride. But we could go off this tangent all day. Before we get started too far, I'm going to go to our first break. And when we come back, Palm and I are going to start first with introducing what he brings to the table outside of his wit and his ability to point out my foibles in terms of boat themed Crime Stoppers. But we're going to talk to you guys, so make sure you give us a call. Air code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. And we will talk to you in a matter of moments here on The Deep Dive.
Searching for more great pro wrestling talk? Then join me, Jason Powell, host of the free weekly Pro Wrestling Boom podcast. Each week, you'll hear the latest news and analysis from me and my team at ProWrestling.net, along with other pro wrestling media members. Plus, the Pro Wrestling Boom podcast features long-form interviews with notable names in the pro wrestling industry. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Downcast, and all your favorite secondary apps, or visit us directly at pwboom.com. Once again, that's pwboom.com.
And as Wade just said in that advertisement, take the time to go on to Amazon. Click on our pwtorch.com/Amazon link. Give a little change in the bucket for the folks who do some great work, like my colleague Sean Radican, who had a phenomenal interview with Kenny Omega fresh off his G1 prep and post IWGP win. So definitely check that out on the site. And that's a nice little way to say, hey, job well done. Now, not here to talk about Sean and sing his praises. He gets enough of that. I do want to sing the praises of my guest this week, who, to one of my best friends in the world, Chris Maitland's chagrin, has become the Tom Hanks of the Deep Dive in terms of most appearances and most listened to. So, Palm, you have handled the wrestling stuff outstanding. Tell him a little bit about what you do with the MTR Network, how wonderful that group of creative forces are, and what got you into the MTR Network and basically to my ears to eventually show up here.
Gotcha. Well, thanks for all the kind words again. I am an editor over at the MTR Network, and the MTR Network is a collection of underrepresented voices talking about music, politics, video games, comic books, movies, everything under the sun. I came to the network as a fan. I was someone who was just who loved listening. Chris, the editor-in-chief of the network, once asked for some callers or some help with some shows. I volunteered, and all of a sudden, I'm co-hosting some shows over there and hosting some sports show. The shows I co-host, though, one, like Rich already mentioned, is the Character Corner. It's our own take on a deep dive, where we take a character that's going to be in the news or in media upcoming and do a 2 or 3 hour podcast. That's actually available on Spotify as well. You can just find us there if you just search for the Character Corner podcast. Every character you can think of, we've either tackled or plan to. And if you have suggestions, you can always hit me up on Twitter at DPalm66. I also co-host the Super Tuesday Recaps, where we review a lot of the CW and ABC Tuesday night. I guess now it's expanded beyond Tuesday nights, but I guess the kind of comic book genre broadcasting that they do. I also co-host something else. Well, I know I mainly host. I also host the Unanimous Decision podcast. I had Rich on last week. It's a weekly look at the world of sports. I don't try to come up with them a way that you usually see as your kind of talking heads. I played sports all through high school and college. I worked in sports after college. I think I bring a unique perspective. And, of course, as always, I try to have just a little bit of fun.
And that's one of the reasons I wanted you on this week, because we wanted to talk about the rising tide that's raising all boats that will be the television money that's coming into the WWE. And we originally, when we were talking about this, it was this striking idea of, is this the opportunity where Roman can kind of make that claim of I am the guy as far as advocacy for the rest of the roster? But before we even get to that, I did want to talk to you about the fact that with the firing of Big Cass, a lot of things have come to light where many fans who might not have paid attention to it, but it turns out that one of the creative forces, not only in Enzo, but also in Roman being fired, were precipitating events, namely them getting kicked out of locker rooms and off of buses by Mr. Reigns. I want to get your thoughts on this, because I know you're one of the staunch Roman supporters I've talked to, but also because personally that was one of the things that turned the tide for me with Roman with regard to respect for him in the back if he's not going to get it on the screen.
100%, man. I think that, and again, like, I don't know if I'm a Roman quote-unquote defender. I try to be honest about kind of what I've seen because I was a last fan. My last event live was, for years, was the Finger Poke of Doom. I was in the Georgia Dome that night, that horrible, horrible evening. And I walked away from pro wrestling. I got brought back in the Mania in Atlanta. I got a free ticket and went with a bunch of friends and kind of slowly tumbled back into this holy love of the 20x20 circle. But I think it's very interesting in that fans have kind of decided that, and I don't know how to get around it. This is a whole other podcast we could do, but the fans have decided that booing and Roman and shitting on his match, excuse me, and kind of downing on his matches before they even occur has become kind of the thing that quote unquote real fans do. So you got like Money in the Bank. It was a very serviceable, more than average match, more than better than average match with Jinder Mahal. I think he did a good job of showcasing both talents, but that Chicago crowd was intense to boo before it started. And while people say, oh, Roman needs to do X, Y, or Z to be seen as a leader over, it's been clear from the interviews you hear from other, not just emergent talent, but a developed and established talent, how respected he is backstage. With the recent news that he's one of the forces who kind of kept the ship afloat during some of the more tumultuous locker room situations, it kind of makes you wonder if it's time to reconsider what a leader looks like in that locker room in 2018 as opposed to the way it did in 1998. 20 years, and let's say some things haven't changed in this business, but I'd like to say I think a lot of things have.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair. And one of the big things that's going to change in the next 2 years is that money. So I want to give you an opportunity before we take our callers. What do you think are the big things with the influx of cash WWE will be receiving that need to happen on the side of the performers? And what are things maybe should there be something like a retirement plan a la most of the major league sports? Should there be an opportunity for maybe instead of additional monies, getting stock options as players? Like, what do you think is the best way as they go forward to make the quote unquote players whole as the owners make this large windfall?
Well, it becomes really interesting because when you talk about the U word in wrestling, everyone gets a little nervous, and for good reason, because they work certain events, because certain events aren't televised. It's hard to classify them as stunt performers because stunt performer television, like the way I looked into this before we recorded, and the way stunt performers are paid in unions is a lot different than the way the WWE pays their employees. Independent contractors. So to even talk about this would have to be first undergoing a massive restructure in the format of the company. Is that possible? Yes, it is, and I'll say that for this. This amount of money coming in, this many more eyeballs are watching. And that means that the carny atmosphere that might have tolerated some of the behavior of calling a big cast on that European tour, it simply cannot be allowed to occur now. Not only cannot be allowed to occur, it cannot even be tacitly signed off on, and the fact that, did you see any best wishes in any future endeavors in that letter that was given? I didn't.
Nope.
So I think what's going to happen is, and I think to the credit of Paul Levesque and his team, they've kind of worked to transform the backstage atmosphere into a place that would be more welcome in a more structured corporate America setting. Because make no mistake, NBC and Fox are saying, yes, one, your product brings eyeballs, we're going to trust you to run things, but two, you also work for us now.
And if you notice, because I got this in my Twitter feed earlier this week, once it was announced, the big cast got the big boot, no pun intended, why did you get rid of, and I think you even tagged in this one, why did they get rid of him for being a Trump supporter when Dolph and then a list of other people are far bigger Trump supporters?
Yeah.
And that goes back to what you're saying about this was an environment where you could have someone that has differing views without it getting acrimonious. But there were several things, most notably by Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, where Kaz went so far as to tout the success of the Muslim ban to a distressed Sami Zayn, which the rest of the locker room, Roman Reigns included, saw as a really bad move. So even if Kaz had all the talent in the world, this is a net positive for them as a company, because when you're dealing with this big money, you're getting rid of a guy before it becomes a bigger problem. When you have more money, more problems. And also, you give a win, even if it's only a name, to your roster, because they have an element that's seen as negative taken out of it.
It's addition by subtraction. And what's interesting is also we saw soon after the Saudi Arabia show, the executive's wife, who had been masterminding this right-wing, I think it's fair and nonpartisan to say troll account, that he was immediately losing his duties. And while this has been a mom-and-pop operation where you could kind of slip things under the rug and, oh, you know, hey, he went away, learned a new hold, and came on back. It may be tougher now in a more corporatized situation because there is so much money on the line, because you're going to be seeing these WWE stars on Sunday night in the NFL broadcast for Fox. And when those eyeballs are on, it's hard to say, well, don't pay attention to that part of what we do.
Yeah. And with all of the issues that are going to be coming up, you're already dealing with Doc Amen and what may be potentially groundbreaking, or not groundbreaking, devastating issues when it comes to ethics and his relations with patients. And you have the questions about the Saudi Arabia trip. This is an easy win. Like, you get rid of this dude. You point at him and Enzo are the guys that have been in the last few months the only two people released that were healthy on the main roster. You could point to the Ely brothers in NXT. One of them got released, but that was just an issue of availability is the best ability one can have when it comes to pro wrestling. And that ties into the money issue. With this money windfall, how much does the pressure come onto the wrestlers to stay healthy if the WWE can now afford to either provide them more, or they have the money to provide more of a rotation? Like AJ Styles, for instance, out of the last 5 weeks prior to the pay-per-view, three of them he didn't wrestle at all. You have the ability to do this now with that sort of money, where you can rotate that talent and have enough quality talent there that you don't feel like anything's missed.
Well, I think the answer to your question is twofold. Is that one, money's going to start driving creative decisions, and people need to be ready for that even more so. Of note, a lot of people are saying, if Shinsuke doesn't win the belt at Money in the Bank, they drop the ball. Well, I've always said, you know, it's not about what you do in the ring, it's that you're in the ring at the top of the card wrestling for the title. However, they could move the belt, because that was the same weekend AJ Styles was being announced as the 2K cover athlete. So it's one of those things where, storyline-wise, I think moving it to Knox makes more sense. But as looking at taking a step back and saying you're serving more matches than the storyline, there was no way the belt was losing its weight. I think the second part of your question about the result of the desire to stay healthy and whatnot, it actually kind of reminds me of the NFL situation, where it's hard to say that a nonpartisan doctor even can exist, because you work first for the team and then for the player. That said, this is a genre of entertainment that has been bereft with health scandals in the past. And as we've seen some outstanding court cases currently, in the present and possibly future. So while I think that you're right, the competition will always be there to be on the road to get healthy, to get back, I think that more and more the companies realize that they have to act like grown-ups. And that's going to trickle down to the behavior of the athletes. And if that comes from a leader locker room like Roman Reigns, from all the accounts we've been hearing, hell, you want to hear how over Roman Reigns is in the locker room, ask Braun Strowman why he's in the position he's in. So I've listened on three different podcasts and watched him from the point of the question, gush uninterrupted for 10 minutes about Roman Reigns' work ethic and what he learned from him.
Yeah, it seems to be two people with Braun. Big Show and Roman, but for some reason it's only Big Show that seems to like catch people's ears when it comes to the development of Mr. Strowman.
100%.
All right, so now we've been talking a lot to you guys, but you want to talk to us, so make sure you either shoot an email to pwtdive@gmail.com or give us a call at area code 515-605-9345. We have a few callers. I do want to get to them so that way they're not twisted in the wind here. And our first caller is longtime Torch VIP member and all-around nice fellow, Mr. Kylan Furlow. Kylan, welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Thank you, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here. How are you and Palm doing this week?
Good, man. Can't complain at all.
I got to talk to Rich twice in a week. He's doing really good over here.
Oh, good man.
It is a wonderful experience getting to talk to him, isn't it, Palm?
Couldn't agree more.
You guys keep blowing me up like this, and then when my wife gets home from her national sorority meetup, she's just going to be like, overrated.
That's how women are, unfortunately, Rich.
Yeah, my wife is very good at making sure my head doesn't get too big, so it's all good, though. That's what a team is all about. I can't be out front trying to take credit for stuff that she's definitely been a handful in helping out with, particularly with this stuff. Like, I'm going all in. I've been to WrestleMania. All of those things happen because Melissa is willing to take care of Trey. Melissa's willing for me to take a little bit out of my play budget and go. So, you know, this is the Melissa Fan Appreciation Hour now somehow, so I'm going to shut up.
And don't forget, I look forward to having you here in about 9.5 months for WrestleMania pre-dinner.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun because Trey and Melissa will be there. I believe her mission is to shop till she allegedly drops in New York. And Trey is going to – he's been trying to push me to go to WrestleMania, but I think I'll be going with representing the Torch, so I don't think that'll be a ability to do so. But I will guarantee him whatever it costs, the access VIP experience to meet, like, John Cena or Roman Reigns, because those are his two favorite wrestlers.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live coverage of WWE pay-per-views, and keep up on the news and read exclusive editorials and special features every day at pwtorch.com.
I'm sure he'll have lots of fun, and like I said, you'll be having dinner here probably the Friday before, which would be all the same day, but we'll square that away at a later date.
Sounds good. So what do you have for us on this fine Saturday?
Well, as usual, I have my trusty sack of questions ready to go. So I hope you're ready to put your thinking caps on here.
Absolutely.
So my first question concerning the weekly topic of WWE or wrestling TV deal in regards to the WWE dual deal with Fox and NBC Universal, will WWE use any of these incoming funds to either fund its global expansion to other regions of the world, such as the imminent launch of WWE NXT UK, or to provide bonuses to WWE wrestlers for network viewing royalties which is something that caused the controversial CM Punk to leave the company just over 4.5 years ago, because if you recall in the podcast with Colt Commander, he complained that his second reason for leaving was he didn't know how the pay structure would be due to the network.
Palm, what do you think?
I think that the expansion of the WWE's footprint will continue. We've heard rumors of the partnership with Noah, including Hideo Itami, going back to work a match. You don't partner with people you don't plan on continue partnering with. It's how you dip that toe in that water. And as far as a wrestler's getting bonuses, I say the name, my friend. I think that the best thing for the wrestlers as far as the TV deal is more eyeballs on them means more merch, means more money. No one's downside is changing, but I think everyone's upside just went up a very considerable amount. But as far as individual bonuses for the network, this wasn't a network deal. This was a television deal, and the exposure is where they're going to get their money.
And I think I would rather not be tied to a network just because the television network's going to be the thing that drives the money. The WWE network, going to house shows, all of those methods by which the old school wrestlers could pull out their notebooks and say, hey, this is what I drew in 89 at the Cow Palace, brother. You can't really do that now because,
right,
to be honest, and this was the original premise of our deep dive today, if you're going to talk about drawing and being the top guy in the era of drawing, Roman Reigns is going to be the top guy in the most lucrative portion of professional wrestling in history. So how do you wrap your mind around that? You can't, because most people will start bleeding out of the nose. So I would say this. Instead of tying the bonus to that, I would tie it to certain ratings markers. Like, if we stay on Fox proper and don't get bumped to FS1, everyone should make a bonus, because you can't really point to a certain person or persons. It's the whole team doing it. I would make it akin to kind of how when you make it to the playoffs in the NFL, you have a playoff amount of money you make. Or in soccer, if your team makes the Champions League or wins the Champions League or wins the league, you get certain bonuses. That's the best way I think you can tie it, because that really will make it an investment for everyone, not just the top guys.
To continue with this topic, question number two. With WWE getting this immense amount of money for its two main shows, and Access TV adding more wrestling-related content to its schedule next year with the resurrection of Glow promoter David McClain's sister promotion, WOW, the Women of Wrestling, along with the Lakers owner Jeannie Buss and Mark Burnett. Do you see Impact or any other promotions receiving massive, for them at least, TV deals in the near future?
Oof. Well, I think I just listened this morning when I was getting my son ready to Dave Meltzer talking with Chris Jericho about it, and he really said the biggest lament that would have been is Paul Heyman couldn't keep it going for another couple of years, because ECW definitely would have gotten one of these, not to WWE's level, mind, but it would have gotten one of those big life-changing contracts. With TNA, I don't know about you, Palm, I just feel like even with the new management, there's such a stigma over the brand that I'm more inclined to say something like the new project that's coming out with with the MLW guys has a better shot at it than TNA or Impact or whatever its new name is.
Well, what you're talking about now is you're talking about reaching another wrestling flashpoint, and the deal could be one thing. Is this for, you have to ask yourself, is this deal because of professional wrestling or is it because of the WWE? And that's a hard question to answer in a vacuum. Mm-hmm. I tend to lean more to the cachet of the WWE, of Vince McMahon, and what they've done over such an amount of time. But there's going to be a next up and next one in line to get paid. It's going to be Ring of Honor, who already has the distribution network in place in Sinclair, and we'll be able to, you know, Alex has got that material if Sinclair decides to invest in that. I think the next step up would probably be a New Japan Pro Wrestling, if they can make a break onto broadcast television or even cable television in America on a consistent basis, a consistent number of homes. Those would be the next two dominoes to fall. Unfortunately, like you, I like to kind of people having places to work. I just think Impact has just been too long. The stink is too real. And everyone who's there has one eye out. Everyone is at the top. You hit the top of the TNA, where do you go? Either WWE or you go lock up something more long time in New Japan. No one seems to be staying for a long time in Impact. And that's not really the fault of the current manager or current creative. That's just the fault of the promotion, kind of how we got here.
What do you think, Kylan?
Unfortunately, I think Palm is spot on. Because seemingly from about the fourth month that TNA or now Impact Wrestling has been in existence, when Dixie Carter made the deal to buy Impact from Jeff Jarrett after the whole pay-per-view number fiasco, Impact has been so incompetently run in terms of listening to television executives that may not have a clue what the heck they're doing in terms of you need to push this guy or other ancillary things, that any person that was a big star in WWE beforehand, as Paul said, have one eye and one foot out the door because they've learned virtually the second that they got there, this place is incompetent, they don't know what to do with me, or they just listen to anything. I could tell them the sky is yellow and they'll believe me.
No, you're not wrong, and that's tough. What else do you have for us, Kylan, before we get on out of here?
My final question is, this is more overall WWE's big picture, but it supplants what we've been talking about in terms of the television deals and wrestling TV deals in general. Do you foresee in the near future that if WWE's ratings drop on Fox to a severe enough level that Peter Rice or some other senior Fox executive will say, you know what, Vince, we want you to do some things like, why don't you replace Kevin Dunn as your head of television production with your son Shane, and for wrestling operations, why don't you have your son-in-law Triple H take your position, because we've heard that he's a little more in touch with what wrestling fans want today.
No, I mean, that's possible, but... Oh, go ahead, Palm. I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, we've also got to make sure that when we frame the conversation about ratings, we understand what we're actually talking about. Right feels the commercials are negotiated on an annual or biannual basis. They don't care about a couple of down weeks. So when people were writing those articles saying, SmackDown ratings down, I guarantee you no one in Bristol cares. That being said, I don't think that Fox would ever exercise creative control, because you've got to understand that television... The products on television that what television actually is a delivery system for commercials. That's how networks make money. They don't actually care about the content. And I can't think of a number low enough where Fox would say, hey, let's get in the nitty gritty of professional wrestling. They don't care about that. If they cared about professional wrestling, they'd start their own league. They'd buy out ROH or they'd do a deal with New Japan. They care about making money, which is why they bought cash cow for commercials that the WWE, has been.
Yeah, I'm completely with them on that. I think the only thing I would add is with the ratings, you know, they just got rid of Lucifer. They just got rid of a number of TV series that were doing numbers they didn't want, but kind of the time what Palm was talking about, they were also niche shows.
Well,
WWE...
Those shows got bounced because of the NFL deal. They needed to free up
right.
airtime. And there's nothing more valuable on television than live programming, which is WWE, is so valuable to commercial, to advertisers. Because there are people like me who will say, I can't catch Raw. I'll fast forward through PVR. But most of the time, you're going to watch live.
Yeah. And as much as, and I think that's where people have to understand, there's so many different flavors of ice cream now that you cannot, the more, and I'm actually going to have Brandon, aka the cool black nerd, on in a few weeks to talk about this. You don't need to hate watch WWE. If you come in knowing what it is, you give yourself so much room to enjoy or bounce out of the stuff you don't enjoy. Vince has said from the day he became the guy, he wanted it to be a variety show. You look at writers who have left, and, you know, I can think of McCarthy. He was on a flight, and he was watching, at the time, I want to say it was not necessarily Kimmo. It was one of the shows, and Vince pops over, and he sees that the writer is watching the Tonight Show. And he's like, well, why are you watching that? We do all of those things. We have humor. We have action. It's like, you shouldn't need to watch anything else. And he legitimately believes that. That's it. And so when you look at what's going to happen on Friday, sure, you're going to have quality wrestlers because they know that's what brings people to the table. But in those 2 hours, you're also still going to get – like if you get what we saw this past Tuesday, plus with the money, you have a lot more to play with as far as the star power. That's almost an impossible thought for me, because I thought this Tuesday was a great episode of SmackDown and something that could be an ideal episode. You have a couple of matches, you have some great skits, and you have quality commentary. That's all you need.
That's true. Thank you very much, Richard. It was a pleasure as usual. And Palm, it was a pleasure to be with you again.
Good talking to you.
And Kyle, and I look forward to when you come back to do your next in your series of shows. Most likely, I think that's the end of next month we're doing it, but get at me offline and we can follow up. And speaking of following up, when we come back, we're going to get some more calls and we're going to finish talking to you guys here on The Deep Dive.
Hey, PW Torch fans, it's Sam Roberts, the last professional broadcaster, here to tell you about my podcast, Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast. Every Thursday morning on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on YouTube, NotSam.com. Wherever you get podcasts, you will find it. Interviews with the A-list of pro wrestling, whether it's Stone Cold Steve Austin, Shawn Michaels, Roman Reigns, Daniel Bryan, just recently Corey Graves, Mauro Ranallo. They're all guests of Sam Roberts Wrestling Podcast, as well as regulars like Dan Soder and one of my favorite people to talk about pro wrestling with, Wade Keller. Plus, every week we do a deep dive and analyze what's going on in the world of pro wrestling. This week, with the state of wrestling, Bruce Pritchard calls it the best interview in wrestling podcasts. I don't know if that's true, but that's what Bruce Pritchard says. Subscribe now, get it every Thursday morning across podcast platforms, or get the premium version at stitcher.com/notsam.
All right, welcome back to the Deep Dive with Rich and Palm. We're talking to you guys. Make sure if you call, area code 515-605-9345, you hit one on the touch tone, out of luck if it's rotary, and we'll be able to talk to you. Palm, we have another caller, 814. 814, please state your name, where you're calling from, and welcome to the Deep Dive.
This is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland.
Hello, sir. Always a pleasure. What outstanding questions do you have for us on this fine Saturday?
One question I have for you is, do you think Enzo and Big Cass could be put up as a tag team in Impact Wrestling, and do you think that they would be over if they would go there? Or do you think the fan base is too different for them over there?
I think they're going to get back together as a tag team. I think that much is clear. In Impact, knowing the way that Cyrus has done things, they currently have Rich Swann, Palm, so do you think it's out of the realm of possibility that Enzo and Cass would go there?
It's professional wrestling. Everything is possible. I think that reports of actual heat from between the two of them are interesting. Could we all be getting work? Sure, it's 2018, but apparently Enzo blames Cass for not finishing the match with torn ACL, which isn't something you can just say, hey, I was wrong, I shouldn't have thought that. It's a tough one to bounce back from. But if there's money, there's a way to do it. And that comes the question. Is there more money in signing an Impact deal, or more money than taking that not Enzo Amore and slightly larger than average cast on the road and working indie dates all over the world? Is that going to make you more money than, say, the Impact, and more stability and more creative freedom? Could you? I don't know. I can't answer that for you because the landscape's always changing. But with all in deciding somehow they're going to broadcast it, which is a whole other series of money issues, but also the fact that, you know, they've got wrestlers on contract from all over the world there. How are they going to pull that off? How are they going to do it with TV rights? It's very interesting to see. It's one of those things that I wish I had a chance for you, but because there's so many balls in the air as far as the new landscape of professional wrestling and just how big the WWE's footprint is going to get also is going to be a factor. Because if you want to work with the WWE in the future, it's probably not best to sign that cast off immediately.
What do you think, Ryan?
I think we will probably see them. I'd say there's about a 50% chance at least we'll see them in Impact sometime, even if it's like a short, like one-off, and it's like a surprise tag team on a show or something to, you know, make things like think anything can happen in Impact Wrestling. I feel like how they had Vader do a match against Brand that surprised a lot of people years ago.
Yeah, you're right. And if they did something like that World Cup of Wrestling again with tag teams, that would be a great way to sneak them in without having had them in for an extended storyline outside of it. So I definitely see your point on that.
Yeah. Second question is, last weekend I got to see Cookhead Beware wrestling. It's like he's changed his gimmick around a little bit. It sort of reminds me of the old G.I. Joe gimmick where they give that message at the end of the show where he gives like a special piece of advice to like the little kids, and piece of advice was to take your dad out for Father's Day because your dad's, you only have one dad, and he also checked on the kids to make sure that they were getting good grades and sort of called them out if they were getting B's and F's. So any wrestlers that sort of changed up their gimmick a little bit on the independent circuit, and who would that be?
Well, the first person I think of is Pierre Carl Ouellette. His last 6 months after WrestleMania and going even a little bit before that when he was trying to get people to remember him. He's definitely changed it up from being the Quebecer to now being this Frankenstein's monster meets just indie darling. I'm taken aback by it, and it's awesome. I mean, I'm very happy for him because, as we mentioned earlier, I want everybody to make money. I really hope that this kind of holds up. Palm, what do you think? Anyone stand?
Well, for me, it's always like the moment that I get a little sad. Someone goes hard left from their established day because that means they figured out they can't make any more money off of it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, back to the drawing board. What else have we got? The gimmick Vince did, I tweaked a little bit to avoid copyright laws. Isn't drawing houses anymore. What can I do next? But no, I guess indie wise, when you watch Gimmick Change, I guess the most successful one I've seen most recently has been what's the gentleman's name? He used to be in the NXT. He wrestled Kevin Owens in the very first match. CA.
Oh, you're thinking of Juice Robinson, the current Juice Robinson. Before that, he was, I can't even remember the name. It was,
CJ something. But yeah, Juice Robinson, you watched him evolve from kind of an eco warrior to what he's doing in New Japan and cutting possibly the best promos on the planet right now. And there are times when say, I wasn't drawing money in WWE with this gimmick. Why would I stick with it? Let me reinvent. But if you're drawing money, go out and be Enzo, not Enzo and not Cass, and go make some dollars.
Yeah. Oh, and it was C.J. Parker. Our chat about Baywatch definitely reminded me. Anything else?
You think the Baywatch episode with Vader was one of the best episodes about wrestling that we've seen for like a TV show?
I would argue the A-Team with, I think it was, let's see, this is coming off the top of my head, so bear with me. I want to say it was Hogan, Piper, and someone else. That, to me, stands out as one of the best ones, mainly because they were so ingrained in the episode without it being awkward. Close second to me, and I'll defer to you, gentlemen, after this, is the Mr. T episode of Different Strokes, because Arnold darn near did cosplay before there was cosplay.
And I feel bad I got to come on your show and correct you because you just become so wrong in one moment here. So there's an episode of that 70s show where The Rock plays his father.
Oh, God. How did I forget? Yes, I stand corrected.
That's it. He plays Rocky Johnson, and that's it. That's it. I'm sorry. That for me, that's the high water mark. I'll also admit, I have not seen this Vader on Baywatch thing. All brand new. I did not know that before I stepped on this podcast. So my opinion may be colored, but Ernie Ladd plays Rocky Johnson's manager. Dwayne Johnson plays Rocky Johnson. Ken Shamrock's there. Jeff Hardy's there. Matt Hardy's there. So Gene LaBelle's the ref. Like, it's a pretty pro wrestling episode.
Well, you got me there. And what about you, Mr. Cumberland Awesomeness?
Well, also a very good one I thought was Little House on the Prairie when they had the big John Brody stepping in the ring and trying to win the title and being tricked into thinking, you know, that he was actually a superstar when the guy was actually daubing him on purpose to make him look good for so that he'd end up losing all the money for the town where he wrestled the world champion. And that was a classic one.
No, that's good. The one I will never mention is the Shawn Michaels, because the Shawn Michaels Baywatch is just good for the gif of him up on the mountain with the binoculars. Like, that's the only thing I took from that episode. And it was just so weird. Like, Vader's was season 6 and Michaels was season 7. And then they wrestled. I'm not even going to get into the nerddom of the timing of them wrestling, because it'd be the episode. Ryan, thank you very much, sir. As always, great questions. Did you have anything else for us?
Just one last question before you think that. They'll say Broadcaster wrestling on TV when SmackDown debuts on Fox Network. That could something really special and mean something to fans.
I mean, I think they're gonna have to do some special stuff for the fans. If anything, I can almost guarantee if they can afford it, time wise, that first episode, The Rock showing up because it's his show. You can't have SmackDown re-debut on network television without The Rock there. I would love for that to be the vehicle by which he introduces Ricochet to the main roster, but I am, of course, wishful thinking Wally right now when it comes to that, because I feel like that would be the greatest head nod we have not seen since Arnold Schwarzenegger did the same thing for The Rock in The Rundown.
Great effort.
And always
a point that's compelling. Now you might get the push to on the first episode, like maybe they could like debut like EC3 or.
You know, I think that first episode of Network SmackDown is going to be like I think we said less a here's some new stuff more than it's going to be more here's the things you've always loved, because you've got to remember that since the advent of the network, there's been no consistent commercial presence on network television for the WWE Network. Now, the most casual fans watching NFL football is going to be hit with commercials starring Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock, and The Undertaker. I would say at least two of the three of them are at the initial SmackDown, and that network subs skyrocket in the first 6 months.
And I think one of the things I'm looking forward to is the NFL on Fox robot doing a Stone Cold Stunner. It just is going to happen at some point.
It's eating that center, brother. I want to see Cletus sell. I want to see him with that Scott Hall sell.
Brian, thank you so much. And I'm going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, Palm and I are going to close up shop, answer any remaining calls here on The Deep Dive.
Support what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast when you shop Amazon. Simply go to pwtorch.com/Amazon. We've simplified the page. There's a big Amazon logo. You click on it. It takes you right to Amazon's homepage. But because of that small detour, we get credit for your visit and we get a commission on anything you buy on that shopping trip. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. Thank you very much for your support.
All right, welcome back to the tail end of the Deep Dive with Rich and Palm. As editor-publisher Wade Keller mentioned, his shows are delightful. I was on this week reviewing Raw. Tuesday was Travis Bryant, whose slander I definitely threw, and he finished up with Greg Parks, if I remember correctly, on the flagship. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, Palm, was the man he didn't have on this week, and that is the master of the Waffle Batter Nation's excuse machine, Cameron Hawkins. As I promised, we're going to end the show roasting the man. And well, we won't be too hard to him, because ultimately he is as much as I'd like to not admit, he is a good man. Put up on Instagram, if you get a chance, at Seahawk, his 5-year weight loss journey, where Cam went from 240 pounds to 180, and really hard work. But now he's turned himself into an Instagram thought, and I can't stand it.
I don't see what about this surprised you. We've known Cam long enough. This is all typical Cam behavior. And I don't want to be short about this, but there's a little thing about it that bothers me. It seems like it's a very small world out there, and that Cam is being very short-sighted in how he wants to portray himself on the internet. And that was all the short person jokes that could fit in that little spiel.
Oof. I mean, listen, I watched the – for some reason my son wanted to torture me, and he put on Days of Future Past, and the scene with Wolverine at the beginning always makes me chuckle because Cam is basically Wolverine. He's got a lot of rage. He can harness it for the most part really well, but you make one too many short jokes and all of a sudden you're getting shanked. And you know that for some people that's an important thing to have is like a quality of a character, but for me, I just think the Torch, we could do better. You, Me, and Wrestling, his hit show where he brings on wrestling fans and they discuss their moments that made them fans, seminal experiences in the wrestling fandom, and what they enjoy currently out of wrestling. It's great. His work with Travis on the East Coast cast is great. But on Instagram, he – and Facebook for that matter. He's like Jekyll and Hyde, Paul.
I refuse to acknowledge successes in other fields until I'm invited onto one of his many platforms. I've had Cam on repeatedly on the Unanimous Decision podcast, available over the NCR network. You can just Google us, UD Pod. But I've never received an invite back. I'd like to once again thank you for having me again. But Cam, I will say this. The t-shirt he generates to make fun of things are very funny.
Yes, I did buy the... I bought the nice Tri-Terry. That was a very...
The Tri-Terry is on its way to my house right now.
That was well played, Cam. Now, before we get out of here, Palm, one thing I do want to do is, and this is something off the beaten path of wrestling, I want you to talk a bit. You talked about MTR Network, but maybe talk about your favorite episode and why. And for me, I would say hearing you and Chris talk about the entire Rogues Gallery, Rogues War, really, for Character Corner, going through both the Rogues Gallery for Batman and Spider-Man. And I think it was Flash as well, or am I off on that?
Yes.
I thought that was magnificent. So I don't... And the reason I'm saying this is because you guys hear about Deep Dive. And one of the things I thought about when I came up with this show was, where could I focus? And what could I focus on? And listening to that episode helped me kind of clarify it. So I want to give you publicly that shout out right this moment.
I do appreciate it.
Because I typically forget.
No, the Character Corner is great for me. It's one of my favorite shows that we do on the network. It is, like I said, it's a quote unquote deep dive into a character or as we're going to call maybe creators. But for me, my favorite episodes are the ones that kind of happen organically. If you listen to the podcast in order, you can hear us develop the ideas we're going to do. I think the Rose War one came out of an argument during another podcast, and we ended up giving ourselves more work. For me, I'd say that the ones that are most fun for me are the X-Men ones, because I was such a well-versed X-Kid. I don't actually have to study for those. I just like grab some of my old books. Oh, yeah, that happened, and I make sure I put a semi-timeline to myself. But my favorite one... that's tough because it comes down to your favorite character or your favorite podcast, but I really, really, really enjoyed doing Tim Drake because I think he might be my favorite comic book character, but I also got to talk about the Clone Saga and defend Ben Reilly on air and people listen. So, I don't know. I like them all for different reasons, but if I had to leave, if you put a gun to my head, I'll take Tim Drake.
Excellent. And I would be remiss... Word to my main man, Craig, wherever he is right now. Day drinking, keeping it real. I'll be remiss if I didn't mention the fact that, for the record, Gwen Stacy is the greatest love of Peter's life.
If you don't believe us, go read Spider-Man 2, which is a series by Jeff Loeb, and it's beautiful. It'll make you cry.
It will. And the more I read the modern run of Iron Man, the more I realize... Peter and Gwen definitely – I'm sorry. Mary Jane has qualities about her now in 2018 that we never got to see growing up. She was essentially the redhead with the looks that kind of blessed Peter with her presence as opposed to this dynamic human being she is now, especially as what, COO of Stark?
You're about to get me to go on another two-hour podcast.
I know.
So Mary Jane was the party girl. It was the death of Gwen, and I forget the issue number off the top of my head. I apologize, mea culpa. I didn't come ready to talk about this. But Peter's crying after the funeral, and she comes by and says, oh, what's going on? He says, go. You know you want to go party, go hang out with your friends. Life is short, MJ, you know. And she closes the door, and that's the end of the issue. She stays. And it was big because she was created to be the other, like, the option. And then as the story got told, and they decided to call Gwen, they realized they had to kind reconcile the character who's going to be the new romantic object in the book. And I agree with you that MJ's come a long way, but those are the issues right after Gwen's death is where kind of MJ becomes formed in my eyes.
Excellent. And I'm very happy that we finished with some Spider-Man love. Before we get out of here, let people know where they can find you, the MTR Network, UD Pod, and anywhere where they would like to discuss with you things that won't involve them getting blocked or yelled at.
Yes, I don't like blocking people, but I do it because I have to. My mental health is more important than your your curiosity. Follow me on Twitter at DPalm66. You can follow the show on Twitter at UDPod. You can follow the entire NHR Network at, you guessed it, the NHR Network. Our entire legion of podcasts is available everywhere you get your podcasts for absolutely free. If you'd like more of the wonderful content that we give you, we have a premium offering with up to and including more than 18 additional episodes a month behind the paywall. It's worth every cent. And take the public plug, and I got to do, make sure you check out Unanimous Decision, episode 98, when we drop Monday morning, which is right around the corner from 100, which I haven't decided if either going to have a very special guest or, like, me slightly drunk, because it's going to also be my birthday. I haven't decided yet.
Awesome. Well, thank you, my friend, for being on. Thank you for spending time with the listeners, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your weekend.
Same to you, sir. Thanks for the invite.
All right, guys, that was DPalm. He now has the record. Maitland, you are on the clock. Deal with it, my friend. Life debts can't beat quality, and DPalm's a quality dude. All right, my friends, it's been a great deep dive for this Saturday. As always, dive into something new, challenge yourself, give yourself an opportunity to step out of that shell you have and go into somewhere new. And in the meantime, in between time, if I can steal the Jerichoism for a minute, the quality of the work done on the Torch, second to none. I am proud to be associated with everyone here. We have our different band members playing different instruments and bringing a nice little symphony for you all. So I'm going to let the boss man talk to you a little bit about what you can do and how you can join VIP, where you can listen to shows such as The Deep Dive commercial free. And with that, I bid you adieu and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, this show can be ad-free and commercial-free with a VIP membership. VIP members not only enjoy all 7 episodes of the PW Torch Livecast with no commercials and the ads and plugs edited out, but they also get ad-free editions of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post shows and the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast. Also, part of a VIP membership and exclusive shows such as the Every Single Day Wade Keller Hotline, the 3 times a week Bruce Mitchell audio show, including a new weekly mailbag edition with Bruce, The Fix with Todd Martin that I also host, post-pay-per-view roundtables that I host, and other shows on specific topics, including the new Talking Honor podcast with Lola and Harley discussing the latest in ROH, including a review of the latest TV show. And now we are proud to announce that Alan Cunahan, known as Alan4L, has brought his talents to PW Torch after many years at The Observer, and there's a lot of excitement about his new weekly show called Alan4L's Pro Wrest Paradise, with the best coverage of New Japan, all of Japan, the UK indie scene, including the US indie scene. So be sure to become a PW Torch VIP member for as little as $8.25 a month on average, and have multiple new VIP exclusive and ad-free podcasts every day on customizable feeds on your iPhone and Android device. For more information and our sign-up form, go to pwtorch.com/govip, and you'll find out what else comes with VIP membership, including a weekly newsletter, over 1,500 back issues of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter that started it all, ad-free access to our mobile and desktop sites, and more. Full lineup, full details, and the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip.